And this is my welcome to everyone. This is Lina Mirmont with Lina Life is back with my greetings to BBS fantastic team and with welcoming my very special guest. We all heard of Magic Flute and we're relating this to Wolfgang Amadeus Mozart. Well, today we have our own very special magic flute. And his name is Gary Strutsos. In a second, we will hear his voice. We will talk at some point about his magic flute. But we will start with his magic talent and truly remarkably magic life. Gary, welcome. Thank you so much for sharing your phenomenal talent. And we will be, of course, hearing your music. But just to start, tell us, why is a flute of all incredible amount of other instruments?
Oh, hi, Lena. Thank you for having me. I always felt that various flutes from around the world, you know, every culture seems to have some type of a woodwind. And for me, being someone that enjoys being outside a lot in nature, I felt the flute had a magic voice that related to the natural world. And I just started picking up different flutes other than the concert flutes and trying to bring my music to various cultures and being inspired just by the natural world. So that was kind of why I started playing the flute.
We're going to jump a little bit from your personal biography and your obviously remarkable teachers. And then we will go travel with your quite stunningly diversified performances. So we will try to put all points of puzzles together with a hardly enough one program. But we will try to do so, and I will ask you to talk a little bit about your shift, because I understand you start as a jazz flutist, and then you've been incredibly diversified from old American Indian music, expanding to Afro-Cuban flute master, mastering with the help of your teacher, Danilo Lozano. And also, you certainly don't have any limitations with genre and places you gave such a memorable performances. So what was the reason for your shifting from fairly traditional jazz flute playing to those very exotic and not terribly well-known eras as American Indian music?
Well, first I was attracted, I guess you could say, to the concert flutes because I was a young lad in college and I saw a gentleman from Scotland playing the flute in a rock band, a gentleman named Ian Anderson from the great British rock band Jethro Tull, who brought a flute to rock music. And at first, I thought I could do something like that. But then I discovered Roland Kirk and Yusuf Lateef and Paul Horn and Herbie Mann, and I just really thought that the flute in jazz was so exotic sounding because it wasn't the main instrument like saxophones and trumpets and obviously rhythm sections and piano or guitar. And I embarked upon a career of trying to better understand jazz flute. And in the process, being the kind of person I am, I became a band leader and had a lot of bands. And I just started to really tire out a little bit of being in the clubs and trying to organize everything. And I shifted then to Afro-Cuban music, like you mentioned, through the studies with Danilo Lozano. And then I had Latin bands that was playing the great music of Afro-Cuba with fusing it with jazz, and that too tired me out, and I decided to find the quietest place I could. And I went to North Dakota, which is in the middle of the United States, to try to find these Lakota American Indian cedarwood flute players that played love songs on these beautiful instruments that had originally come from vocal singing. And I think I just needed to find a place of serenity. And I just traveled to a place that no one would ever imagine to find these flutes, because I really realized that music, you know, could be a powerful force on the planet out of an urban environment, I guess. So that's kind of in the short of it, how I moved from the jazz and Afro-Cuban music. I really wanted to, I was very interested and really enamored with what had happened to American Indian people through times, and then how did their music survive and how dear it was to the people to carry on the traditions.
Well, as we had very delightful short conversation prior to our program, I remarked on the fact that you're traveling to the past in order to be so expressively and freely expressive in the presence. It is very rare indeed, and I think you colored in a very unique way by attaching history and human feelings and human traditions, regardless the times, regardless the centuries, and regardless the geography. I also very happy for you that you can take a flute with yourself. Pianists cannot do that with a piano.
Right. Exactly. I think people ask me, well, are you a sound traveler type person? I said, well, I try to bring history and cultures alive just through the personal studies. Like you said, I don't have to be the great classical player to understand a little bit about the indigenous flute music. And what the Indian people taught me was that the songs weren't composed, Lena. These songs came to the people through the spirit world, and they were gifts from the spirit world to help these people. So some of this has endured. So, you know, maybe me traveling to these places, it gave me an opportunity to travel to the past without maybe me realizing that when I first went there, I didn't really understand maybe some of the spiritual level and the power that that music had to the people, and that the songs did come through the spirit world. They weren't composed like you would sit at a piano and compose a piece of music.
We will be jumping soon to the flute itself, but I like to express my personal, totally mesmerized feeling when I was listening to your music, but also looking at the picture, which I will try to overcome now, radio limitations because of no visual opportunity. But this picture, which is a part of your wonderful, very classy promotion, with also your words, which says, if you listen closely, you can hear the land and ancient voices. I hope I said it correctly.
Yes.
The picture in itself is not only magnificent in its own way, but it's done in a very clever, fantastic effect when you're holding the flute and then partly it touches the water. It's almost where there is no gap, where you're totally inseparable with Mother Nature. For some reason, I felt that you've been in the best concert hall in the world, where mountains is the wall of a concert hall, and whatever growing and living little or big organism are your listeners. So you truly unlimited with your performing, unlimited with your performing emotional and intellectual environment. I like to ask you, do you feel a shift between being in the hands of magnificent Mother Nature, which speaks to you very lovely, and being in more conventional, traditional situations, because your performances certainly took place in a number of noble places, which I will mention later in the program. So how do you feel as a person, as an artist, with your flute, a transformation, giving a different command to your instrument and expressing yourself in a, such a different artistic way?
Well, if you're asking me about how I feel as the relationship with Mother Nature or the music in general, I like to look at whatever space I'm in as a integral part of the music, a partner or a collaborator. The importance of the space and the music. So I feel that being a soloist, really first and above all, the exploration of beautiful melodies come alive in what I consider sacred spaces, where one has the weight of history, or you see the results of humanity's quest for transcendence. It's a lesson, and it brings space as a new way of looking at things. So I do really try to, I like to tell young people when they ask me about the flute, I say, you know, how do you transcend the spiritual through the phrases? So I think this partnership or this collaboration has a lot to do with who I am as an artist, if we're dealing with the natural world.
Just in a little technical moments. Are you sensitive to the acoustic quality of concert hall and sounds even very silly? How sensitive you are towards acoustic in a Mother Nature environment? What is the best place for you to perform?
Well, that's an interesting question. I think rather than the best place, I think I would say that for me, if I'm in a structure that is considered a historic space, something very old, that is really one of my favorite places. Or when I was in Japan, I had the opportunity to give small intimate concerts in Buddhist temples, and that was very, very spiritual for me. And also I've played in places like Canyon de Chelly, Arizona, which is the spiritual lands of the Navajo Indians in present-day Arizona, where the flute is echoing down canyon walls 10 miles down. So, again, this relationship of being inside a space, whether it's in a Buddhist temple or in a canyon in Arizona, it's hard to pinpoint which one, but I can tell you that I do find myself a little disappointed now at my age when I am in an environment like a club where there's food and alcohol and noise. I don't do well in the nightclub atmosphere.
You know, you predicted my question, because I wanted to ask you, how can you find yourself in the middle of a big city with all this conglomeration of noise and totally opposite to Mother Nature environment? Do you spend sometimes in a regular environment, if not club, but do you run away from the big cities?
Well, I can tell you, even though I'm in Seattle, Washington, we're surrounded by coves of water, and I have secret places that I go at certain times of the day, and I use the cadence of the water coming in, hitting the sand. It's like a metronome, the waves just splashing, and I sit in the on the rocks, and it's very quiet out there, except maybe for an occasional plane, obviously, or a boat that goes by, but I'm not sitting in New York City in the middle of Manhattan trying to play a bamboo flute. So I have a lot of quiet places here in our great Pacific Northwest that I can time travel with the music. In fact, I compose better outside in these certain places than I do trying to sit in the house or be in a rehearsal studio environment.
I'm so glad that you try not to compose in the middle of Manhattan.
No.
Because I don't think your flute will like you very much after that experience.
No, I don't think so. But as we know, when you look at the legacy of American jazz and the great artists, obviously Miles Davis and John Coltrane and Thelonious Monk and Duke Ellington use the pulse of the city and the people to create their kind of music, which is just wonderful. It's just a different approach for me.
That's exactly how we mark our spiritual world, our aura, our temperament. And I wanted to thank you to be so true to your own talent, fundamentally to know who you are for yourself and for your music. I like to play your first composition, which called Meditation, to return to your most incredible description of your piece, where you feel at home with the nature and your flute. So we will have an episode from the piece which called Meditation, and I believe that is from one of your albums, Shadow of Time, after which we will touch upon your performances and some of your accomplishments.
Okay.
I would say again that I have my fantastic privilege and the joy for all of us. We have my guest, Gary Strutsos, and his first composition in this program, which is called Meditation. Extremely uplifting, even after that short episode of the called Magic Meditation. I was a bit frivolous. I hope I will be forgiven, because the purity of this and yet incredible fullness, after all, that was just a flute, but with a duet with Mother Nature in the hands of Master, with such incredible, genuine, powerful talent as Gary has. This flute is singing and filling our soul for a very long time after piece is finished. I'm continuing on the flute, and I wanted to ask you, Gary, if you can qualify the principal difference in bamboo flute and regular flutes which are using for the orchestra.
Mm-hmm.
You have a...
Right. Well, let me tell you first that what you were hearing on that Meditations is a 100-year-old Haynes Wood Concert C flute made in 1904 by the master flute maker William Haynes, of course, who passed away. And Haynes is actually located in Piedmont Street in the great city of Boston, Massachusetts. So you were hearing a very antique concert wood flute, which gives it a little different timbre than a silver flute. So switching from a flute that's made of wood with keys, which you seldom hear in America, you'll hear classical players play wood flutes in orchestras in Europe because it's part of their tradition. The kind of monolithic or ancient bamboo flutes or even my handmade American Indian flutes, they don't have any keys or mechanisms, so their range and intervals is very limited, but they can produce a very haunting yet plaintive sound that if you can extract, you know, the what's inside of them and take your time, these instruments are not really made to play like what you heard with the Haynes flute because I don't have keys and a whole scale on them. So what I like about my Chinese bamboo flutes, which is what you hear on that Shadows of Time record, and also my American Indian flutes, which you hear on the recordings I sent you, it's a very haunting and plaintive sound, and it takes a lot of work to manipulate them to get the mystical qualities that one tries to achieve or interpretate the music that you're playing.
I would say it's a perfect balance between transparent simplicity of the flute, because there is no one key in this flute, and yet tremendous symphonic sound you're creating. It is absolutely beyond anybody's imagination. But again, I wanted to ask you, is bamboo particularly is very sturdy and very generous in adaptation to different acoustic natural environment?
You're asking me if the bamboo, does it lend itself to the environments you're in? Is that what you're asking me?
Yes. Is it well adaptable? Because I know bamboo is very strong. My knowledge is very limited, but I know that it is quite sturdy and very strong and long-term living material. So how sturdy and how dependable the flute you're playing from some difference of climate, how sensitive it is?
Well, that's interesting, because a lot of the Chinese flutes that I have gotten over the years from a master Chinese flute player in San Francisco, with the humidity or taking them down in the desert, they'll all crack on you unless they're lacquered. So you have to be very careful that these, you know, again, they're monolithic instruments. They're very, you know, they're made by hand, and they will crack if you're not careful with them.
So they're porous. They are sensitive.
Right.
Okay. I wanted to ask you, again, coming back to civilization, the fascinating thing is that you are so much beautifully living in the past, and yet you are very present. Again, I'm repeating this because this is such a rare accomplishment. And before I will come to your performances, I still wanted to ask you, do you see possibility that bamboo can be used with a somewhat conventional group of people. I know that you use it with your colleague, which happened to be our guest, David Lenz, a few programs ago. And it is very fascinating duet and combination of sounds. So I wanted to ask you, what is your most preferable harmonious to your ear and your soul combination?
Well, that's a good question, Lena. I can answer it in two parts. First, the American Indian flutes are so unique and tuned in a way that the maker kind of tunes them the way they tune them. They're very hard to play with any type of Western tuning unless the violin would detune it to the scale of the flute. They work best with some of the exotic percussion, like you hear on the records I sent you, because the percussion works well with the American Indian flutes. When you brought up David Lawns, my dear friend and collaborator, he liked the Chinese Xiao, X-I-A-O flute, because that flute has transformed over 2,000 years into an instrument that can play in tune, but not perfectly in tune, because there is no flute that's perfectly in tune, right? James Galway doesn't play perfectly in tune because of the wind and the timbre and the way. You're never going to find a flute that's perfectly in tune. I don't care what anybody says. But the Chinese Shao bamboo flute that's played vertically, it's the one you saw in that picture I sent you, that works well with the piano just to a certain extent, because again, it only has a limited 2-octave range, so you have to be very careful because it can tend to get a little pitchy. So that flute works better with piano and cello than, say, the American Indian flutes that I play. Does that answer your question?
Certainly. And now I like to go to some of your performances. There are a number of celebrity musicians which are incredibly impressive with their list of appearances. Yours are so incredibly diverse. I would say several people could play the genre of music you've been playing, and the places you've been playing are just so different from each other. Some of them extremely prestigious locations. I call location as a White House. I was certainly very impressed even with the fact that your music was used in a documentary, and that, I believe, led your performance at the White House. Could you tell us about this documentary, which is was...
Well, when I first went to the state, I mentioned North Dakota in the middle of the Great Plains where the buffalo used to roam that the Indians hunted to stay alive. I went there to find those Indian people to learn about their flutes. And when I went there, I helped start an American Indian record label in Bismarck, North Dakota, called Makoche, which means the land in Lakota, Makoche music, and I documented a lot of beautiful melodies from the Indian people. Well, at that time, there was a great epic historical event that happened in present-day United States, the Lewis and Clark Corps of Discovery, when President Jefferson sent a military expedition to find a water route from St. Louis all the way out to where I live, out here in the state of Washington. Well, obviously, he needed music for the part of the journey that went through the Indian people that are descendants still alive today that still live on the river, the upper Missouri River, because the river gives life to the people. That's what Keith Bear told me, who's also part of the documentary that I did with the music. Ken Burns did a PBS documentary. He's a filmmaker that's done a lot of great PBS work. They used my music for that and other Indian music. And at the end of the commemoration, which was over 10 years ago, the 200-year commemoration of Lewis and Clark, we were all invited to the White House by President Bill Clinton, who obviously is not the president anymore, and we gave a special presentation of the music. So that's what led me to the White House. But I never thought about going to the White House, and I never thought about working with Ken Burns. At the time, I was just studying music with the Indians. He, as in Ken Burns, came to us. So that's how that prestigious event happened.
Well, the documentary has mysterious content. It says Journey of the Corpse of Discovery. It is something very mysterious. Could you tell us a little bit about the main theme?
Well, what's mysterious about it is that President Jefferson at the time in 1804 was fascinated with American Indian customs, and he wanted Lewis and Clark to find out as much as they could about the ways of the Indian people. But during that time, Napoleon from France needed money to fight a war, and he sold the middle section of the United States called the Louisiana Purchase to Thomas Jefferson. So when Lewis and Clark got out there to meet the Indians, they told the Indians that they owned the land and gave them peace medals. And today the Indian people are still a bit in wonderment about how can you own the land? We have lived here from generations that go back beyond counting, and now you're coming and saying that the great-grandfather in Washington, D.C. now owns our land. So to Indian people, Lewis and Clark was a very, very, you know, kind of a sad meeting, even though the Indian people took care of these people and fed them because they felt sorry for them. But it was really a military expedition, like a business trip to find a water route for commerce, which today, obviously, there's a lot of commerce on the rivers. But at that time, the Indian people took Lewis and Clark and the men in, and it's amazing that they ever made it all the way to the Oregon coast, to the Pacific Ocean and back, without any Indian people actually killing all of them. So it's a very unique story, and the Indian people need to tell their story instead of always the story from the military expedition side of things. So if that's a quick history lesson for you to understand, and your listeners, that the Lewis and Clark Corps of Discovery expedition was a very, very unique time for Indian people that were still living off the land, on the rivers and on the plains, all the way out to the here at the Pacific Ocean.
Well, that brings quite a question: how much beauty and mystery of our history was open through your music. Again, your flute is almost like a leading beam in your life, and it's also becoming quite contagious for all of us to see the connection, something which I take on a highly personal and professional level, because unfortunately in our time we're quite separated with our mental duty. We're becoming so rushed and technically oriented, but there is no escape. We would have to find our connections and reconnect to the past, to the history which is dear to us. And I believe that the fact that you are living in our modern society, yet carrying treasure of understanding and feeling the history in its most incredible, glamorous way, which is music, and yet you care enough to put it in words, which are so, so close to your music, is such a remarkable accomplishment. I like to play another composition of yours, and then we will continue our discussion. The composition which I like to play now has name Shango.
Shango.
Shango. Apologizing. Shango. And I like to play this, and then we will talk about this particular composition where flute and human voice literally inseparable.
Thank you.
Difficulties to interrupt this incredibly beautiful created environment, and I just wanted to make a few technical comments. This ostinato rhythm reminded me some dances which been used as parts for some Slavic operas. For example, Borodin was using this ostinato rhythm when he wanted to introduce some other colors and some folk element. One comes in mind, his Polovetsin dance, which is so similar with this quite refined, a bit subdued, and yet very pronounced rhythmic formula. How much you've been inspired by folk music itself to this intricacy of pentatonic, of its perhaps old American Indian motifs? How much of a role do you feel it is playing in your creations?
100%. It's all about the spiritual chants, Lena. That, you know, that's a Yoruban Nigerian sacred chant called Shango, and Lazaro Galarraga, the singer, is a Santeria priest, so he's singing to the god of thunder, Shango, which is his deity. So I'm trying to echo the flute to his voice, and those rhythms are purely African, as you can tell, and that's one of the most haunting pieces I think I've ever recorded, because Lazaro is leading and guiding his spirituality through it. He reaches such a spiritual level that his instrument, the voice, becomes himself. It's unbelievable piece of melodic exploration and a rare interpretation of Cuban music that's not usually heard. And I have to thank Danilo Lozano for producing this record. Oh, really? You see his picture in there. It's from the CD I sent you. It's an unbelievable exploration that I'm, the purpose of combining wooden flutes with world percussion instruments to explore mystical qualities of Afro-Cuban religious music through instruments that bear their own magical and mystical quality. So the melodies which he's singing in Me with the Flute, it serves as the musical resource for a unique interpretation of the music itself. So the goal was to produce a record that had a spiritual and mysterious journey of Cuban music through instruments that are foreign to Cuba's African musical heritage.
I was jumping in with one thought that relates to genuine folk nature in general, because even though it is so clearly belongs to certain national roots, it's genuine, but in the same time when it's genuine, it spreads its wings and creates this association, and you do feel at home with these beautiful motifs, even if you belong to another culture and even if you're ear trained with another folk melodies. Mm-hmm. I feel there is a certain universal thing, because when something is genuine, you can relate to this no matter where you're coming from.
Exactly. It's just, maybe a gift that I have been given by some of these different ethnic groups with their music, again, that the music can be a powerful force on the planet. There's more to being a musician than simply achieving fame and fortune or having one's name in a Hall of Fame or winning a Grammy. I play a lot of different music, but I do come from improvisation, which is really the basis of jazz music, right? Spontaneous music, which means one must be attuned with the living moment, fully open to all its wonders, challenges, and delights. So it becomes a personal and exciting experience, always fresh and new, always changing. So whatever I learn and experience today is added to all my yesterdays, and something a little different will come out of whatever horn I'm playing tomorrow.
And if you will allow me, I will come back and delicately introduce our modern society. I'm not doing this with great ease, because I like to remain in this absolutely endless, beautiful mother nature with your spirit and your music. But you're actually being quite comfortable giving performances in a very real intellectual environments. You did perform at Stanford University, you performed at Princeton University, so you're not stranger to immediate cultural demands, to best part of our modern living.
Uh-huh.
You've also been lecturing, and you've been very generous with the younger generation, especially, again, with the inclination to American Indian culture. So somehow you've been traveling and combining all these elements. Can you tell us a little bit about your experiences in the university environment, and what kind of a music did you play there?
Well, I brought all my flutes and talked about my personal travels and how they related to the music I was playing, and sharing a glimpse of deep tradition, not my own, not coming into ethnomusicology departments and music departments where I'm standing on a soapbox and saying, hey, look at me, I'm trying to make all this knowledge out of sound, and I'm really trying to say, hey, I'm just trying to share what was shared with me in a good way. And when it comes to the kids, well, we're losing our history, as you know, in this world. And for me to work with children is really more important, to not necessarily teach them how to play, but to give them a glimpse of all this different beautiful music that I've studied the last 35 years, and maybe I can inspire a few of them to maybe think about going to meet some of these people someday if they choose, when they get old enough to travel and take up some of these instruments. So, yes, I have tried to bring this into, I guess you would call, the legitimate world when you're dealing with universities. But as you know, the egos and the people that, you know, might challenge me because I might not be published or have a PhD, I just feel that, you know, I have a PhD in working in the field with the people. With the kids, well, they're just all full of wonderment, and they just are like sponges, right? They just want to hear the flutes and see the flutes. I mean, the less I talk and the more I play the flutes is probably better for the kids, because you don't want to be talking on and on too much to the kids. They just want to, they want to hear the flutes. So, yes, to answer the question, I've been in a lot of different situations, and I would like to continue doing that. It's just very unique instruments that I play, and you need to find a good place to hang your hat, I guess you could say. Where would someone like Gary Strautsis to come and share what's been shared with him in a good way?
And you certainly created many wonderful hangers for your hat. And to add to this, I wanted to share with you my very, very strong philosophy, which you expressed in your very eloquent way. Those children, unfortunately, sometimes brainwashed with the idea that music is a lousy profession. I'm in my everyday effort trying to establish another credo, to say that music for life, which is much greater than just a profession. And that's something which you brought to the world with a flute and yourself. And your mission is so deeply appreciated on every possible level. It looks that you performed in so many different places. You even went to Alaska, which now I'm sure famous not only because of Sarah Palin, but because of Gary Strautsis.
Well, I'm going back to Alaska April 8th, and I'm actually the promoter in Alaska and Anchorage is working on ways for me to go into the Native American communities and share some of this music. Imagine playing Shango for Alaskan Native kids living out in the middle of Pluto. What do you think that would be like if they could hear Lazaro Galarraga sing Shango? Because it's not about me, Lena. You know, it's like 98% of people in music exist in rules, as you know. And one has to go through a process to reveal their soul. A great flute player, Paul Horn, I asked him, what should I do when I'm playing music for people? He said, you know what to do. Let them hear your soul. And I said, wow, that's the coolest thing anybody ever said to me, let them hear your soul. And these kids need to be around more music folks that will reveal their soul, not put a bunch of rules on them. And that's why the music education system is changing in this country. And maybe in some way I can be a mentor, because you're right, it's really not a profession, it's a gift of myself and the flutes, because why? I took the time to go meet the people. The Indian people like me because I took the time to go meet them, period. Nothing more, nothing less. Didn't try to get any money out of them, didn't try to tie my star to them, didn't change my name, didn't try to become an Indian, just became their friend through the music.
And your, just objectively speaking, I would say geometrically, very discreet, petite instrument compared to others. But this petite opens such a giant, endless world, which can compare to the graciousness of the organ.
The river, to go back to the river is wide. And for me, the greatest thing I could do now at 56 years old is to give back something to the kids. Now, how I'm going to do that, I'm still working on it, but I'm not really interested in any awards, and I'm not really interested in any gimmicks or any type of showbiz. I'm only interested in playing a haunting melody on a haunting, plaintive flute for my friends, the wonderful children who need us the most.
And I like to attach one sentiment, which does not relate directly to our program, but it relates to myself personally. And hopefully I will find some others who will be as enthusiastic as I am. It happened to be that in Europe, today is a celebration of Women's Day, the 8th of March. And in every corner you can find this specifically grown, bright, yellow, elegantly looking flowers. And man is trying to bring their flowers to their mothers or wives or friends. And I have today a very special gift from my son, who is a composer. And he gave me today his new finished recordings, which is tremendously beautiful music. And for me to have it as a mother, as a musician, and as a woman is somewhat very, very special. I wanted to say that your program today, Gary, I feel another gift. I feel as if I met musician of tremendous depth, total purity, uncompromising integrity, which is somewhat more challenging in our times, in our high-tech mentality, than it was 10, 15 years ago. And I wanted to also thank your publicist, Lydia Sherwood, and send her my warmest woman's wishes. And I hope that your continuation on every human, musical, and artistic level will bring that much more moments for yourself first, for your flute audience, whether it's a Mother Nature or concert halls. And I'm looking forward to our other programs with you and perhaps some making music together.
Well, I appreciate that, Lena. God bless you, and I'm glad I made you happy today, and we should stay in touch, and I will send you some more of my recordings as a gift from me to you, because I appreciate your kind, and I can tell, being the Greek, Italian, Lebanese boy that I am, I can hear your genuine truthfulness and honesty, and you have a true spirit about you, and you actually made me today feel that I shouldn't give up and surrender trying to share the music with the kids. So before I hang up, you kind of even re-inspired me again a little bit today about carrying on in a good way.
Now I really know I had a gift today and for many days to come. I will say until soon, not a goodbye. We certainly will be in touch.
Okay. Great to speak with you, and it would be great to speak with you again, and hopefully I can hear what we talked about today in some capacity. So we'll talk about that another time.
Absolutely.
Okay. Thank you very much, then.
With my greatest pleasure, that was my guest, Gary Strauss, with his music, and of course with his website, which, Gary, perhaps you can tell us how to find you and find your recordings.
It's just my name, GaryStrauss.com, just like it's spelled there. That's how people can find me.
This is wonderful, and certainly you will be shining here in East Coast to the best of our abilities.
Okay.
And on this note, I will say again until soon to Gary Strauss. And until next time.
Until next time, take care, my dear, and we'll talk again soon.
Thank you so much.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye. Bye-bye. And I will say goodbye to my listeners with my warmest thanks to BBS, to all women around BBS station who hopefully will celebrate this Women's Days in the best of a spirit. I certainly had my fantastic dose, and perhaps I will conclude with a lovely glass of wine tonight, thinking about my program, my beautiful audience, again BBS, because after all, their young men will inspire many women for wonderful things. Until next time, this is Lina Mirmont, Lina Life. Goodbye.